BBC World Service. Welcome to World Briefing with Alex Sabin. The headlines at 6 o'clock GMT. A former Serb army commander accused of the mass killings of thousands of Muslims in the Bosnian town of Srebrenica in 1995 is expected to appear before the War Crimes Tribunal in The Hague in the next few days. The Israelis have carried out another airstrike in Lebanon, killing two Syrian soldiers. And left-wing guerrillas in Colombia have been involved in a big battle with paramilitary squads and the army in the northwest of the country. We'll have all those stories in detail and a report on why the oral contraceptive pill seems to give women some protection against bowel cancer. And in sport, the Williams Formula One team celebrate a Grand Prix win for the first time in almost 4 years. This is the BBC in London. First, the top stories in detail.
BBC News with Mary Small. A former Serb army commander accused of being involved in what's been described as the worst single atrocity in Europe since the Second World War is expected to appear before the War Crimes Tribunal in The Hague in the next few days. The former commander, Dragan Obrenović, is being charged in connection with the extermination of thousands of Bosnian Muslim men from the town of Srebrenica in 1995. Bridget Kendall reports.
According to witnesses, Dragan Obrenović was arrested in the town of Zvornik, near Bosnia's border with Yugoslavia. He was apparently bundled into a car by a group of people in plain clothes. NATO officials later confirmed those who arrested him were S4 forces. He'd apparently been the subject of a sealed indictment since early April. The mass killings of thousands of Bosnian Muslims in Srebrenica has been described as the worst atrocity in Europe since the Second World War. Mr. Obrenović was known as the chief of staff of the Dvina Corps, the Bosnian Serb army unit that took over Srebrenica in July 1995, just before the massacre took place. One of his fellow officers is already on trial at the International Tribunal in The Hague on charges of genocide.
Lebanese security officials say at least two Syrian soldiers have been killed and several wounded after Israeli fighter planes attacked a Syrian radar post 40 kilometers east of Beirut. The Israeli army said the attack was in retaliation for the killing of an Israeli soldier on the border on Saturday by Hezbollah guerrillas. Jeremy Cook reports from Jerusalem.
The Israeli jet fighters struck on the Lebanese border with Syria, pounding a Syrian army radar station. As well as the Syrian soldiers killed, several others were wounded. Israel says the action was a direct response to attacks on its northern border by the Lebanese Islamic group Hezbollah. In the most recent incident this weekend, a missile attack against an Israeli tank killed an Israeli soldier. In a statement from the office of the Prime Minister, Ariel Sharon, the Israelis repeat their claim that Hezbollah attacks are carried out with the knowledge and under the auspices of Syria. The statement says the Syrians have not lifted a finger to stop such operations. The Lebanese Prime Minister, Rafik Hariri, has described last night's airstrike as an aggression against Syria and Lebanon. He called on the international community to intervene.
The authorities in the United Arab Emirates say they've managed to contain an oil slick from a sunken tanker that had been threatening to cause a major environmental disaster for the Gulf state. The UAE health minister said Coast Guard divers had managed to plug holes in the ship through which the oil had been pouring. The United States Navy says the Georgian-flagged vessel was carrying Iraqi oil in violation of United Nations sanctions. You're listening to the news from the BBC. The leader of a rebel group in the Democratic Republic of Congo says he won't allow United Nations peacekeepers to deploy until the UN condemns ceasefire violations by Congolese forces. A UN military spokesman, George Kilburn, told the BBC there was evidence confirming that government troops had burned villages and killed some of the inhabitants. But he said that peacekeeping deployment should not be linked to an as yet unpublished UN report on these incidents. Left-wing guerrillas in Colombia have been involved in a big battle with paramilitary squads and the army in the northwest of the country. Rebels from the Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia, the country's largest guerrilla group, clashed with right-wing paramilitaries in the Terrassa municipality of Antioquia State. Colombian troops later attacked the guerrillas. Early reports said up to 50 people had been killed, but a military spokesman said only one body had been found so far. Jeremy McDermott reports from Colombia.
It's been a bloody Easter weekend in Colombia as the illegal armies of the extreme left and right launched offensives against each other in different parts of the country. The latest attack was perpetrated by the Marxist rebels of the 17,000-strong FARC, the Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia. Security forces entered the village of Caucana in the northern Antioquia province. They found only smoking ruins. There were reports that the village was a base for the right-wing paramilitaries of the Self-Defense Forces of Colombia, the AUC, hence the rebel attack. Analysts see this latest FARC attack as part of an ongoing campaign to challenge the territorial control enjoyed by the paramilitaries in the region.
The authorities in Japan have indicated that the country's Crown Princess Masako is pregnant after 8 years of marriage. Crown Princess Masako, who's 37, suffered a miscarriage 2 years ago. Correspondents say that a pregnancy now would be a matter of enormous public importance, as only males are allowed to assume the throne in Japan. If the baby's a boy, he'd be second in line after his father, Crown Prince Naruhito. BBC News.
It's 6 minutes past six GMT and you're listening to the BBC World Service with Alex Sabin. The arrest of Dragan Abrenović, a Bosnian Serb accused of involvement in the worst atrocity of the Bosnian War, the massacre at Srebrenica, is being welcomed by prosecutors at the War Crimes Tribunal in The Hague. He's seen as an important player in the massacre and is being held responsible for the murder and torture of 7,000 Muslim men. The spokeswoman for the War Crimes Tribunal in The Hague, Florence Hartmann, outlined the accusations against Abrenović.
He's accused on the case of Srebrenica, of the mass killings of thousands of Muslims, and he was the chief of staff and the deputy commander of the Zvornik Brigade.
The arrest represents a breakthrough in relations between the War Crimes Tribunal in The Hague and the NATO-led forces in Bosnia, S4. Mrs. Hartmann said those responsible at the highest level should also be arrested.
We are insisting on the fact that those high-ranking must be arrested. And you know that Karadzic and Mladic also are indicted from 95 on the case of Srebrenica. And it would be very important that they join the Hague Tribunal and that we have a trial on Srebrenica at the highest level.
The spokeswoman for the War Crimes Tribunal in The Hague, Florence Hartmann. Against a backdrop of escalating violence in Lebanon and the Palestinian territories, Israel today resumes negotiations on security with Palestinian officials. The chances of progress towards easing the violence appeared to recede further when Prime Minister Sharon made clear that Israeli forces will continue their assault in Palestinian territories if they consider them necessary. Our correspondent Hilary Anderson looks at the prospects for talks under these conditions.
Joint security talks are expected to resume, but the question is what they'll achieve. They're taking place under American pressure and against the backdrop of violence that has escalated significantly over recent weeks. The Israelis have now made it clear that they'll continue to carry out military operations inside Palestinian areas if necessary. The Palestinians say this marks a dangerous moment. So the talks about how to end the violence will take place whilst both sides are stepping up their aggression and the language of confrontation. Senior Palestinian negotiator Saib Erekat.
I'm against the killings of any Palestinian and Israeli, anywhere. That's a commitment by us to have peace, but I'm afraid that such Israeli policies and such Israeli attacks is just like adding fuel to the fire. It will mean the loss of more Israeli and Palestinian lives. I don't recall any moments where the situation had deteriorated to this level.
A fundamental problem between the two sides is also that Ariel Sharon's government has said it will not hold negotiations with the Palestinians, but only talks about how to end the fighting. This is in line with Mr. Sharon's election pledge not to talk about a peace deal whilst the violence goes on. The Palestinians say any discussions that don't include real negotiations about political issues are virtually pointless. The only thing the two sides do agree on is that Israel is trying to use its military might to put the Palestinian uprising down. So far, that tactic is not working.
Hilary Anderson in Jerusalem. The Saudi Interior Minister, Prince Nayef ibn Abdulaziz, begins his first full day of talks in Iran today, ahead of a scheduled signing of a major security pact. The pact covers cooperation in combating organized crime, terrorism, drugs trafficking, illegal immigration, and border surveillance. The agreement, which took 2 years to negotiate, falls short of military cooperation. The Iranian ambassador to Saudi Arabia said Prince Nayef's visit and the signing of the pact were the most important developments in the history of relations between the two countries. Relations between the two former rivals have improved greatly since the election of the reformist Iranian president, Mohammad Khatami, 4 years ago. The United States has said that the oil tanker which sank in the Gulf on Saturday had been carrying Iraqi oil in violation of United Nations sanctions. The ship, the Zainab, was intercepted a few days ago but was hit by a strong wave and sank. She went down with 1,300 tons of fuel and a huge oil slicks formed off the coast of the United Arab Emirates. The authorities there now believe they've managed to contain the oil slick. Caroline Hawley reports.
After several hours of silence about their efforts to control the spill, the authorities in the UAE are now proclaiming success. The health minister said divers from the country's coast guard had managed to plug holes in the ship, which is now on the sea floor. He said environmentally safe chemicals were being used to treat the slick and that it had begun to disperse. A spokesman for the US Navy said earlier that the Zainab sank while on its way to an impounding centre after it had been stopped and found to be carrying smuggled Iraqi oil. He said the aging ship went down several hours after a strong wave destroyed equipment on board. It was an accident waiting to happen. Western Navy officials say smugglers tend to use old vessels that are often poorly maintained because they know they'll lose them if they're caught. The US Navy said the Zainab was the 24th ship impounded by the American-led multinational interception force so far this year. An official in the UAE said it had been bound for Pakistan.
Caroline Hawley. You're listening to the BBC in London. Today's main news, a former Serb army commander accused of the mass killings of thousands of Muslims in the Bosnian town of Srebrenica in 1995 is expected to appear before the War Crimes Tribunal in The Hague in the next few days. The Israelis have carried out another airstrike in Lebanon, killing two Syrian soldiers. And left-wing guerrillas in Colombia have been involved in a big battle with paramilitary squads and the army in the northwest of the country. The Sri Lankan Defence Ministry has said that Tamil Tiger rebels have clashed with Navy gunboats, trying to prevent them from bringing supplies ashore on the northern coastline. A Defence Ministry spokesman said the military had sent for reinforcements and that Air Force jets had been deployed to provide cover for two damaged Navy vessels. He said five sailors had been injured. The battle has, in effect, broken a ceasefire that both sides were observing separately. During the past 3 weeks, peacekeepers have been sent to several key towns in the Democratic Republic of Congo, on both the government and the rebel-held sides of the front line. They're there to protect the equipment of observers who are monitoring the withdrawal of the opposing sides in the conflict. But on Sunday, the United Nations suffered its first serious setback when rebels refused to allow the deployment of a group of Moroccan peacekeepers to the strategic town of Kisangani. The rebels said they wouldn't allow UN peacekeepers to deploy in the area they control until the UN condemned alleged ceasefire violations by Congolese forces. Joseph Mudumbi is in charge of foreign affairs for the rebels for the Rally for Congolese Democracy.
We want MONUC to publish his report, as he told us the report, and we want them to condemn the attitude of the government of Kinshasa. Since they have not done so, we can't allow the deployment in Kisangani. We are telling them that we accept the deployment in Kisangani just after 6 hours of publishing the report.
A UN military spokesman, George Kilburn, said there was evidence confirming that government troops had burnt villages and killed some of the inhabitants. But he said that peacekeeping deployment should not be linked to an as-yet unpublished UN report on these incidents. And the commander of the UN military mission, Major General Montiago Diallo, told the BBC the incidents were still being looked into.
The investigation is not yet completed. Once it will be completed, we will have to report. I understand the violations are something, let's say, serious, of course. One village was burned, some people were killed, according to what the population told us. I understand, but I think that must be a reason to continue the process, to speed it if we can, but not to stop it.
The commander of the United Nations military mission in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Concern is growing about a ship which set sail from the Cameroonian port of Douala on Thursday, supposedly heading for Cotonou in the Benin Republic. Among the passengers are believed to be many young boys and girls recruited from villages in Benin and Togo to work and go and work in the more prosperous Gabon to the south. Elizabeth Blunt in Lagos looks at the phenomenon of West Africa's working children.
Little maids are everywhere in West Africa. In Abidjan in the afternoons, teenage girls sit in rows outside the city's smart apartment blocks with the babies and toddlers they were hired to mind. In middle-class Nigerian homes, the house help in the kitchen is often alarmingly young. You find young girls and boys hawking cold water around every West African market and washing up in buckets alongside every cooked food seller. Some of the youngsters are working with their own mothers or aunties, and some with distant relatives. But others were recruited by agents who tour the villages in the poorest rural areas, promising kind masters and mistresses and good wages. Good mistresses do exist. They take responsibility for the children in their care and make sure they get some kind of education or basic training. But others are cruel to their young maids, beating and abusing them, and turning them out into the street when they get old enough to answer back or pretty enough to attract the attention of the men in the family. And even the kindest families are often reluctant to pay teenagers cash wages, assuming that a child from a poor village should be grateful to earn her keep and be taught civilized manners. It wouldn't even occur to them that working for no pay could be considered slavery.
Elizabeth Blunt reporting. The president of Moldova, Vladimir Voronin, arrives in Moscow on Monday for his first visit to Russia since his election as president in February. Mr. Voronin campaigned on a platform of closer relations with Russia, including the possibility of Moldova joining a union with Russia and Belarus. Our Moscow correspondent Robert Parsons reports.
Tiny Moldova, wedged between Romania and Ukraine, is becoming nostalgic for its Soviet past. In February, it elected Vladimir Voronin, a communist of Russian ethnic descent, president by an overwhelming majority. Moldova had come a long way since the early 90s, when local nationalists spoke of a merger with their ethnic kin in neighboring Romania. It's not hard to understand the transformation. The country's economy is in ruins, its people impoverished and unemployed, and its debts to Russia running into hundreds of millions of dollars. Mr. Voronin has a busy two-day schedule. A meeting with President Putin will be followed by talks with the Interior Minister, the head of the Security Council, and the head of Russia's Security Service, all high-level meetings. One matter they'll certainly discuss is the possibility of Moldova joining the Union of Belarus and Russia. Mr. Voronin has made it a priority, that and establishing Russian as the country's second official language. In return, though, he'll want Moscow to put more pressure on the leaders of Moldova's breakaway region of Transdniester. The region fought a bitter war for separation from Moldova after the breakup of the Soviet Union, with Moscow's help. Now that Moldova is back in the fold, it'll hope Russia will tell the separatists to abandon the struggle.
Robert Parsons in Moscow. Scientists in Italy say the oral contraceptive pill seems to give women some protection against bowel cancer. They say it may be possible in future to develop treatments for the disease that exploit the pill's anti-cancer properties. Andrew Craig of our science staff reports.
Researchers have suspected for some time that the hormone estrogen contained in the contraceptive pill may help women to avoid cancer of the bowel. This latest research, published in the British Journal of Cancer, collates studies done since the 1960s. It confirms that death rates among women have fallen faster than those of men, and the pill appears to explain the difference. The estrogen reduces the amount of acids released into the colon. They're thought to promote the growth of tumors. Estrogen may also help to reduce excessive levels of a growth hormone that can make cells divide too quickly. The researchers, led by Dr. Carlo Lavecchia of the Institute for Pharmacological Research in Milan, hope that they'll be able to isolate the anti-cancer effects of the pill from its contraceptive properties and so develop new drugs to treat tumours.
Andrew Craig reporting. You're listening to the BBC in London. Today's main news, a former Serb army commander accused of the mass killings of thousands of Muslims in the Bosnian town of Srebrenica in 1995 is expected to appear before the War Crimes Tribunal in The Hague in the next few days. The Israelis have carried out another airstrike in Lebanon, killing two Syrian soldiers. And left-wing guerrillas in Colombia have been involved in a big battle with paramilitary squads and the army in the northwest of the country. It's 6:20 GMT, Sports News now, and I'm joined by Nishat Adat.
Coming up in this roundup of world sport, the relegation battle is on in England. We look ahead to the day's Premiership fixtures, and Celtic's footballers are well on course for a Scottish treble. But first, motor racing. Ralf Schumacher has followed in the footsteps of his older brother Michael by winning his first Formula One Grand Prix. Starting third on the grid in San Marino, the Williams driver took the lead at the first corner and held on to it for the rest of the race. David Coulthard was second for McLaren to move level with Michael Schumacher at the top of the Drivers' Championship. From Imola, here's our motor racing correspondent, Jonathan Ledyard.
How ironic that the circuit, which did so much to knock Williams off their pedestal, should announce their reinstatement as a Grand Prix force. The Senna trial in Imola in 1997 cost Williams in so many ways, not least winning races, the raison d'etre for team owner Sir Frank Williams and technical director Patrick Head. Until Ralf Schumacher's perfect 10-pointer yesterday, this most English of teams hadn't won since that season of court appearances. Now, McLaren and Ferrari could have a job keeping pace. Ralf Schumacher was true to the family name, and when Juan Pablo Montoya gets some luck and reliability, the championship will be as spicy as it's been in years. That said, nobody scored points as well as David Coulthard's McLaren in 2001, and after Michael Schumacher's first race failure in 9 months, Williams won't be the only team raring to go in Spain in 2 weeks.
Well, now football, there's a full programme of Premiership action in England today, and with the Championship already decided, relegation issues will come under the spotlight. Looking ahead to the day's fixtures, here's Richard Fleming.
Bottom side Bradford City can claim a maximum 18 points from their remaining 6 games, but they're without a fixture on Monday and could be 17 points from safety come the end of the day if Middlesbrough and Derby County win their home matches against Ipswich and Leicester respectively. Coventry City's fight for survival continues with a home game against Sunderland. Next to bottom Coventry are no strangers to the Premiership relegation scrap, but manager Gordon Strachan is refusing to be drawn into making predictions.
There's plenty of people who have games now, outside football, pundits, everybody else who's had a look at football once and thinking become a sports personality. We'll just play and see what happens.
Elsewhere, and Everton face Liverpool in the Merseyside derby. Liverpool have their eye on a place in the UEFA Cup final. They're already into the FA Cup final and winners of the English League Cup. Everton, meanwhile, are 3 places above the relegation zone. Their manager is Walter Smith.
Always a big game, one that, regardless of club's position or you know what they're fighting for in the Championship, it always brings out a very teethy affair. And it's a game that we look forward to.
And the remaining game in the Premiership sees Newcastle at home to West Ham, 14th against 13th. Both sides have 39 points and should be safe from the basement battle.
Having secured the Premiership title on Saturday, Manchester United are now focusing on the future. They travel to Bayern Munich on Wednesday, needing to win in the Olympic Stadium following their 1-0 defeat at Old Trafford 2 weeks ago. And the United chairman, Martin Edwards, says he's also looking beyond that. With Sir Alex Ferguson set to step down at the end of next season, Edwards needs to find a successor.
Peter Alex has a very good number two. We have to look at that. We also have to look at other people as well. And Alec will be involved in that process as well. We've got to make sure that whoever takes over from Alec, that we're all confident that that person can do the job.
You mentioned the number two at Old Trafford. That's Steve McLaren. Would you say that he's in pole position for the job?
He's certainly one of the candidates and a strong candidate, along with whoever else we feel could do that job. I wouldn't put it any stronger than that, but certainly Steve has done an excellent job as Alex number two. Alec will have a view on that as well.
Celtic are firmly on course to claim the domestic treble. They'll meet Hibernian in the Scottish Cup final after beating Dundee United 3-1. Here's Roddy Forsyth.
There will be green and white ribbons on the Scottish Cup at Hampden Park next month, that being the colours of both the contending clubs, Celtic and Hibernian. The bookies, of course, will favour Martin O'Neill's side, seeking the Scottish treble for the first time since 1969, when they achieved a clean sweep under the guidance of Jock Stein. Whether Celtic complete the treble or Hibs break their cup hoodoo, which has jinxed them since 1902, nobody can deny that this season belongs to O'Neill and his players. Henrik Larsson's double yesterday took his total to 49 goals and broke Charlie Nicholas's post-war scoring record set in 1982-83. The performance was typical of their campaign. A top-drawer header from Larsen put Celtic ahead, and even in United's best passages, they rode the punches, as they have done time after time, en route to the approaching climax.
In Spain, Real Mallorca have jumped to fourth place in the first division, pushing Barcelona out of the Champions League qualification places. Mallorca beat Las Palmas 2-1 at home. Relegation-threatened Racing Santander recorded a welcome victory, beating Celta Vigo 3-0 at home. Numancia and fellow strugglers Real Sociedad drew 3-3. And in France, Lyon are now second in the table after a 2-0 win over Paris Saint-Germain. Lyon trail leaders Nantes by 4 points. The African Champions League match in Bulawayo between Highlanders of Zimbabwe and Young Africans of Tanzania was abandoned 5 minutes from time because of crowd trouble. Missiles were thrown onto the pitch by the crowd, with the favourites Highlanders on the verge of going out of the competition. They were trailing 2-0 in this first round second leg clash after the opening leg ended in a 2-2 draw. Young Africans are expected to be awarded the tie by the Confederation of African Football. There are two results from the Asian zone of World Cup qualifying. In Group 8, India drew 1-1 with Yemen. The Group 9 match between Cambodia and Maldives also finished in a 1-1 draw. Now on to tennis, and the top seed, Juan Carlos Ferreira, has won the Estoril Open. The Spaniard beat his compatriot Felix Mantilla 7-6, 4-6, 6-3 in the final. Watching was Bill Scott.
It took Juan Carlos Ferreira exactly 3 hours to collect his second title of the tennis season. But the top-seeded Spaniard says that while his three-set victory over compatriot Felix Mantilla was draining, he's certainly ready for more workouts on the clay leading to the French Open. Ferreira lost his first set of the week as qualifier Mantilla leveled the match at a set apiece. The 26-year-old challenger had come in with 17 straight match wins. Those were part of a miracle comeback over this spring after shoulder surgery in the summer. Mantilla won two minor titles before getting to Estoril, but he couldn't take advantage of a lead over Ferreira in the final set. Ferreira collected the last five games in a row to earn his second title of the year, that after Dubai 2 months ago. Spaniards continued their domination of the neighboring event. They've won 9 of 12, including the last five trophies.
And Angeliz Montolio made it a Spanish double in Estoril by winning the women's event, her first WTA title. The Spaniard defeated Russia's Elena Bovina in 3 sets. And the women's event at Amelia Island in Florida was won by Amelie Mauresmo. She beat Amanda Kurtzer of South Africa in straight sets. The victory stretches Mauresmo's winning streak to 15 matches. On to cricket, Pakistan beat New Zealand by 7 wickets in the Sharjah Tri-Nation tournament. Pakistan bowled New Zealand out for just 127, with off-spinner Saqlain Mushtaq taking 4 for 17. Pakistan went on to reach their victory target with 24 overs to spare, with Inzamam Ul Haq hitting an unbeaten 85 off 67 balls. And in golf, the PGA event in South Carolina will go into a fifth day. Darkness halted the sudden-death playoff between Jose Gutierrez and Billy Mayfair. Both players had carded final round level par 71s to reach 11 under par for the tournament, and then both players parred the 18th and 17th holes before night fell. Before we go, our main story again. The Williams driver Ralf Schumacher upstaged his brother Michael to win his first Formula One Grand Prix in San Marino. The victory brought the Williams team their first success in almost 4 years. David Coulthard in a McLaren was second to put him level on points with Michael Schumacher at the top of the driver's standings. And that's all from this roundup of World Sport.
Thanks, Nishat. Nishat Adat with the sport there. A reminder of today's main world news. A former Serb army commander accused of being involved in what's been described as the worst single atrocity in Europe since the Second World War is expected to appear before the War Crimes Tribunal in The Hague in the next few days. I'm Alex Sabin. You're listening to the BBC in London.